Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome everyone to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it was part of our good martini on Wednesday about the great conservative night on Tuesday evening. Scott Walker getting more votes in his unopposed race to make it to the finals of the recall, as opposed to all the Democratic votes combined in the competitive race to challenge him next month. And now we find out, and folks can read about this more in the Morning Jolt, that the news is actually even better than we suspected, because as you have discovered, and some others as well, a lot of the folks who ended up voting in the Democratic primary were actually people who will probably end up voting for Scott Walker. They were just trying to influence his opponent.
Yeah, a couple points worth noting here. First of all, as we mentioned, just an enormous turnout for Scott Walker in a primary that really wasn't a primary. I think there was one other category of a candidate we might just call some guy who had their name on the ballot next to Scott Walker. No previous position, no advertising, et cetera, et cetera. And Scott Walker by himself in this primary had more votes than the top two Democrats combined, and nearly as many votes as the Democrats had in their very competitive primary, or at least we thought was going to be a very competitive primary. So of that, this was not based on an exit poll. Unfortunately, there were no exit polls in this race, and it would have been kind of useful to have some. But a poll taken before the election, looked at people who were going to vote in the Democratic primary, and 17% of them said they were Republicans. There was an effort by the Republicans to help Ms. Falk. I suppose that's F-A-L-K, Falk, in case anyone's mishearing me, that she was considered the weaker of the two candidates, and she actually did not win, did not even come close in the primary election. So Tom Barrett will be the Democratic nominee. Rasmussen has a result out this morning, putting Walker up 50% to 45%. But a couple of interesting things is that Falk was the labor union choice. The two largest labor unions, including the teachers' unions, were strongly behind her. And as I argued this morning, if you can't move votes in a Democratic primary, why would we believe you'd have a larger impact on the vote in a general election? I would go out on a limb and say most teachers' unions members and their families and their friends and all of their affiliated folks are more likely to be Democrats and thus would be voting in the Democratic primary. So no one should take anything for granted. Scott Walker still has a one-month sprint ahead of him. There'll be two debates in the coming month. Tom Barrett had wanted four debates in a four-week general election campaign, Greg, and I kind of was looking at that and thinking, really, one debate a week? I feel like an exhausting schedule when during the Republican primaries, and even the presidents only do three. Why they would need four in a four-week general election is beyond me. But keep your eyes on Wisconsin. Things are looking good for Scott Walker, but it's not all done until Election Day, and as we've seen, sometimes it's not even done then. So no need to let up any effort in Wisconsin for Republicans.
No, absolutely not. Things are looking pretty strong for Scott Walker. He's doing well on money, and as you mentioned, the first poll out after the primary looks like he's got an encouraging lead. He's up by 5 and is at 50%. So that's pretty much where we thought he would probably be, and that's great. So on to martini number two now, Jim, and we forecast this yesterday. As Charles Krauthammer said on Fox last night, this is the first time in the history of the world that evolution has been accelerated by the approach of a coming election. Here it is.
When I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
I thought at many times he looked kind of awkward there, Jim. I think at every pause in there, he's like, why did I pick Joe Biden? Why did I pick Joe Biden? And I think a lot of people also noticed that he said the troops fight on his behalf, not the country's behalf, but that's a discussion for another time. The pure political cold calculation here is the interesting part. If you go back to Obama's history, he's been in favor of gay marriage from the get-go, but he reversed his position publicly because he thought it was politically untenable when he was running for Senate and the first time when he was running for president. And now, of course, he needs all the help he can get from his base. A lot of people are saying that donors from the homosexual lobby are replacing some from other lobbies. lobbies that are not giving what they were 4 years ago. And so what could have been portrayed, Jim, as something of an epiphany now just looks politically crass, especially when he fully admits that he had a calculated time to roll this out, and Joe Biden forced his hand a little bit early.
Yeah, I think regardless of your views on gay marriage, I think the cravenness of an opportunism that's going on in this decision is pretty appalling, because if you're a supporter of gay marriage, I'm curious how many of those folks out there really believe that Barack Obama opposed it until very recently. I think this man spent his adult life in Chicago in Hyde Park in very progressive circles. The idea that gay marriage really bothered him, and the idea that he really believed that marriage is between a man and a woman, is that assertion always emitted a bit of an odor. And the other thing which is kind of fascinating is you look at the statement, you played some of that earlier, let's kind of emphasize certain points here. As I talk to my friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff, when I think about those soldiers, airmen, marines fighting on my behalf, I've just concluded that for me personally, it's important for me to go ahead and affirm that it's all about him. And it was kind of fascinating. I was watching this when, the news broke yesterday, that Diane Sawyer touted this as a culturally historic moment. They broke into the soap opera. Like, really? Because if you really believe this is a huge deal, what basically is announcing, Greg, is that the president's feelings have changed. No policies have changed. Nothing. He's still a Federalist, which, by the as many people point out, Obama is still to the right of Dick Cheney on this issue. And, I was just hoping that at some point Dick Cheney was going to issue a statement yesterday saying, about time, you close-minded bigot. But was not to be, at least as far as we know. So from what we can tell, it appears many members of the gay and lesbian community are doing cartwheels and are really thrilled about this. I guess I can't begrudge them that. But the fact that this is being so transparently politically manipulated is a little disturbing and frustrating in light of everything we see and know here.
Yeah, and kudos to Mitt Romney for handling it the way he did yesterday. I think that's the way Republicans and conservatives need to handle it on the way out. He didn't dwell on it. He was asked about it. He stated specifically that he believed marriage was the union of one man and one woman. That is the conservative position, and that is something I don't think conservatives should shy away from. This election, as Romney has said over and over again, is about the economy, and we're not stupid, and that should clearly be the focus. But conservatives and Mitt Romney should definitely state what the longtime conservative position is in defense of the traditional family. I know you very closely followed John Kerry in the 2004 campaign. Jim, I think it's safe to say that if marriage amendments are not on the ballot in 2004, John Kerry may well have won that campaign. So it's impossible to know for sure, but those definitely helped George W. Bush, particularly in Ohio. On to Martini number three now. And Jim, I don't know how much you think about the loyalties of presidential candidates. You like to think that they're loyal to our country. We have one that just recently ran for president, however, who is now becoming a dual citizen of Switzerland because her husband apparently has dual citizenship in Switzerland. And if you couldn't figure that out already, we're talking about Michelle Bachmann. She says it's no big deal. Maybe it's not, Jim, but it just seems weird that a sitting member of Congress and someone who wanted to be the chief executive of this country now seems more than fine becoming a citizen of another country, too.
Greg, U.S. policy is pretty binary on citizenship. You're either with us or against us. That other countries may recognize dual citizenship and individual Americans can assert dual citizenship. But in the eyes of the United States, it's an either-or situation. Either you're an American citizen or you're something else, and there's really no in-between. The U.S. government does not recognize dual citizenship, which I think is the right policy. It's nothing wrong with having a, pride in your country of your heritage. My attitude is, though, you only live in one place. I suppose if you have residences in two countries and work requires you to be in two countries, then I suppose there's a certain, complications that could arise to that. But none of these applies to Michelle Bachmann. And it just seems very, very strange. I don't believe that citizenship is like a dimmer switch where you can just kind of, adjust it up and down, Greg. I think it's pretty much, you are or you aren't. No one is saying that Michelle Bachmann isn't an American citizen anymore. It just seems politically tone deaf and very strange. Even if she'd always wanted to do this now is particularly bizarre. I think it's safe to say we just cannot quite understand or figure out what's going on with the Michelle Bachmann congressional campaign. Her presidential campaign certainly had its share of surprises and what she's thinking type moments. And This is just one more of them. Michelle Bachmann, we should never really think we've really got a handle on her that much, because, you know, just when you think things are placid, some new interesting curveball will come this way, i.e., you know, Swissgate.
Exactly right. And she's just been gerrymandered to an even tougher district. She's had some pretty tough re-election fights before, and so I can't imagine this is going to help her in a district that leans more Democratic than it did 2 years ago.
She would be a very strong candidate for the Swiss Parliament.
And maybe that's what she's thinking. If Obama wins re-election and she doesn't, maybe she's already got her plans lined up. But we'll find out. Jim, we'll leave it there, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.